ભગવતે વાસુદેવાય ઓમ નમો ભગવતે વાસુદેવાય ઓમ નમો ભગવતે વાસુદેવાય
રીડિંગ ફ્રોમ ધ શ્રીમદ ભાગવતમ Canto 8, Chapter 16, Text Number 12. Agnayo Tittayo Britya Vikshavo Ye Chalipsavaha Sarvam Bhagavato Brahman Anudhyananarishyati Agnayo Titayo Britya Nikshavo Yecha Lipsavaha Sarvam Bhagavato Brahmanan Anudhyananadrishyati Agnayo Titayo Britya Vikshavo Cha Lipsavaha Sarvam Bhagavata Brahman Anudhyananadrishyati Sarvam Bhagavato Brahman Anudhyanam Nishyati Ladies, please. Agnaya, worshipping the fires. Atithaya, receiving the guests. Britya, satisfying the servants. Bhikshavaha, pleasing the beggars. Yea, all of them. Who? Cha, and. Lipsavaha, as they desire, are taken care of. Sarvam, all of them. Bhagavataha, of you, my Lord. Brahman, O Brahmana. Anudhyanat, from always thinking. Narishyati, nothing is missed. Everything is properly done. Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. O beloved, first of all, just so we know who's speaking, Aditi is speaking, the wife of Kashyapa Muni, and she's answering his question he had asked earlier. Is everything going on the way it's supposed to? Are you performing all your duties the way they should be performed? The reason he asked that is because when he entered, he had been away for a while, and when he asked that, he came into the ashram, and he looked around, and there was a sense of gloom, a sense of like a pall had hung over the place, a sense of sorrow, a sense of sadness. He could feel it, although everything was in order. The furniture was, it wasn't in a place, or it wasn't in a situation of disarray. It didn't look like it had been neglected, but it was just this, he was a very sensitive person because he was a spiritual person. And a person who is spiritual can sense the vibrations of a place. And he was feeling this vibration of sorrow and sadness and lamentation. So he questioned her, and as a result of the questioning, she is now answering him in accord. So she says, O beloved husband, the fires, guests, servants, and beggars are all being properly cared for by me. Because I always think of you, there is no possibility that any of the religious principles will be neglected. Then we text number 13. I'm just going to the translation now. O my Lord, since you are a Prajapati and are personally my instructor in the principles of religion, where is the possibility that all my desires will not be fulfilled? This verse is an intimation of the fact that she has some desires, and she's going to let him know what those desires are in a few moments. And she's also stating that because he is illustrious, because he's exalted, because he's highly knowledgeable in the scriptures and in practice of the activities mentioned in the scriptures, that he will be able to fulfill her desires. She has complete confidence in him. Fourteen, translation, O son of Marichi, because you are a great personality, you are equal toward all the demons and demigods who are born either from your body or from your mind, and who possess one or another of the three qualities, sattva-guna, raja-guna, or tamaguna. In other words, the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance. But although the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller, is equal toward all living entities, he is especially favorable to the devotees. Again, she's moving on towards this request that she's going to make. In effect, what she's saying is, because you are a devotee of the Lord, and because you are, as a result, you are very dear to the Lord, and therefore, because you are dear to him, he feels some great indebtedness and a great affection toward you, and he will fulfill anything that you will ask of him, because what you will ask of him will be something useful and beneficial and helpful. And since you are his devotee, he will do that. So we move on to the purport now. In Bhagavad Gita 9:29, the Lord says, Samo ham sarva bhuteshu name dvesho sti na priya. Ye bhajanti tamam bhaktya mayite teshu chapyaham. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is equal toward everyone, He is especially inclined toward those who engage in His devotional service. The Lord says, Kuntiya Pratijani Name Bhakta Panashiti. My dear son of Kunti, please declare that my devotee will never be vanquished. Elsewhere, Krishna also says, Ye yata mam prabhadyante, tamstataiva bhajam yaham. Mama vart manu vartante, manusya parta sarvashaha. Actually, everyone is trying to please, that's 4.11 by the way. Actually, everyone is trying to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead in various ways. But according to their methods of approach, the Supreme Lord endows them with different benedictions. Thus, Aditi appealed to her husband by saying that since even the Supreme Controller favors his devotees, and since Indra, Kashyapa's devoted son, was in difficulty, Kashyapa should bestow Kashyapa should bestow his favor upon Indra. Omagina timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmaditam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. So here we have Aditi. There are sisters. There's Diti and there's Aditi. Aditi is the mother of the demigods, and Diti is the mother of the demons. In fact, her first children were, anybody remember who her first two kids were? Yeah, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. So Aditi is the mother of the demigods, and Kashyapa Muni, he is, of course, their father. And they've produced the sun god and the moon god and Vayu, the wind god, and Varuna, the ocean god, the various gods have come from them. So the situation is this, is that Aditi is a mother who has raised these children, and who are now no longer children, but they are actually grown up, and they have responsibilities. And what is more enjoyable than... sorry about that. What is more enjoyable than when a mother who has given birth to her children, and her children come and visit with her, and they talk together, they revive certain incidents of the past, they laugh together, they sometimes joke together, they talk about old times together. There's a sentimental feeling of comfort and closeness and a feeling of togetherness that such family gatherings tend to bring. And this obviously is what she is missing terribly, because her sons are no longer there. What has happened to them? Well, they have been kicked out of their positions by Bali Maharaj and company and all of his men. And Bali Maharaj at this point in time is the leader of the entire universe. He has taken over the planets. He has put his own men in charge. And he's literally kicked the demigods out of their position, and they're wandering around someplace. And like, again, any mother who has given birth to children, and these children are illustrious, they are very exalted, and she loves being with them. She loves conversations with them. She loves hearing about their activities and their doings. But now she's completely deprived of this. She doesn't have this now. She's alone. No children in the house. No stories to hear. Nothing to talk about. No talking about the past. And so this is what has brought this gloom, this pall, this sorrow into the home, because she's feeling alone. She's feeling deprived. She's feeling as if those persons, namely her children, have been taken away. They're wandering someplace. She doesn't know what's happening to them. She's wondering, are they okay? Are they healthy? Are they strong? Are they in a state of depression? Are they in a state of dejection? Are they in a mood of uncertainty and doubt? What is happening to my children? This is a normal position for a mother to be in. And so, therefore, she's slowly but surely coming to the point where she will ask her husband to in some way enable those children to come back. Well, the only way that that could happen would be if, in some way, one of her children were to overcome and conquer and be victorious over Bali Maharaj. That's the only way that could happen. Now, presently, Bali Maharaj is in a position of strength, a position of power, position of greatness, and he can't be overcome by the demigods. They're in a state of weakness at this point. So somebody new has to come into the picture. So the only one who could really do this at this point in time would be who? It would be the Supreme Lord. And that's what she's going to ask her husband for. That I want the Supreme Lord, who can conquer over anyone and everyone, including Bali Maharaj, and get him out of all these planets and bring my children back so that I can have a normal family life. And so, therefore, we see this is her concern. She's also very loyal to her husband. She's very faithful. She has followed the instructions that her husband has given her while he was away. Sacrificial fires, performing certain prayers, taking care of the deities, performing a certain amount of devotional activities, worship, and so forth. And so the place, actually, as you look at it, it looks clean, it looks neat, it looks orderly, it looks like it's in nice condition, but the sense and the feeling of doom and despair and depression, it's all over the place. So, of course, Kashyapa Muni loves his wife, and he wants to relieve her of the suffering. And he knows that, of course, if he could in some way fulfill her desires, she would feel much better. But in effect, also, as we will see from the following text that's come, what he feels is that his wife is terribly bewildered. She's terribly in illusion. She's so much attached to her children, the demigods, and that doesn't make any sense, because the philosophy of the Vaishnava philosophy is, yes, raise your children, and raise your children to be God-loving, God-fearing, and raise the children to become excellent in their service, and raise them so that they can do it as a loving service to the Supreme Lord. But the point is this, is that getting attached to the children will not end your problem. Because when the children or the sons are away, you become grievous again. You feel, sorrowful. You feel like you have nobody here. In other words, you're basing your happiness on their bodies. The appearance of their bodies in the home should not be the means of your happiness. So what is he saying? Is he saying that you should forget your children? Not at all. What he's saying, and what he will go on to say, is that what you really should be doing is reposing your love in the Supreme Lord. Because that's where you'll find real security. That's where you'll find real peace. That's where you'll find real strength. That's where you'll find reciprocal love coming. Simply expressing, waiting when you have your sons and you have your daughters or whatever, and that will only last for a very short amount of time. And the result afterwards will that you'll be again filled with despair. You'll be filled with uncertainty. You'll wonder where they are and things like this. But if you take shelter of the Supreme Lord, if you depend upon the Lord, as Krishna says, in all activities, just depend upon me at work, always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. He also says, engage your mind, always in thinking about me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisance, worship me. Thus completely absorbed in me, surely you're going to come to me. And if you come to me, it doesn't only mean a physical coming, but it's also a mental and spiritual coming. It means feeling the presence of God, feeling His company, even though we may not be in a face-to-face situation. Because when God gives His mercy, gives His blessings in the form of His love, then He enables the devotee to feel joyful, to feel peaceful, to feel loving, to feel strong, to feel confident, to feel those positive types of feelings which give us a sense and feeling of our connection with Him, our relationship with Him. So this is what Kashyapa Muni will be hinting or stating a little bit later on. That if you want the security, you want happiness, you want to be truly joyful, the way you're going about it is not the right way. Because simply having the sons back again and just talking, you're attached to their flesh. And that's because you're attached to your own flesh. You're attached to your own body. And this is the same instruction that Krishna gave to Arjuna in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So you're attached to your own body. And if you're attached to your own body, then you become attached to the extensions of the body. And what are the extensions? Well, the children are the extensions. The home is the extension. The family is the extension. The communities is the extension. The cities are the extension. The paraphernalia that you use is your extension. Your cars are your extension. Your accomplishments are your extensions. The praises that people give you for having done something good are your extensions. So we become attached to all these things, which if we lose them, where are we? What do we have? We have nothing. So we often put our attachment on all these things which can be taken away from us. And when they are taken away from us, what happens is, as I've just mentioned, there is sorrow, there is gloom, there is despair, there is uncertainty, there is doubt. There is this feeling of insecurity. So Kashyapa Muni will mention that if you want to be secure, then you have to secure your mind in the supreme security. The supreme security, of course, is the Supreme Lord. Because He's all-powerful. He's all-knowing. He's present everywhere. He's filled with the six opulences of beauty, and wealth, and strength, and fame, and knowledge, and renunciation. He can give you the comfort. He can give you the love. He can give you the joy. So the question comes that, is she supposed to become so detached that she just forgets her children? That's impossible. There's too much of a tie there. But the philosophy is that if you become attached to Krishna, attached to the service to Krishna, the love for Krishna, the glorification of Krishna, if you become attached to those things so that Krishna is always on your mind, as Krishna says, engage your mind always in thinking of me, not occasionally, not partially, engage your mind always in thinking of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances, worship me. And whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, do this as an offering unto me. Keep me in mind. Don't forget me. And I will not forget you. The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart, Krishna says. And I am always in the core of the devotee's heart. The devotee does not know anything else but me. And I do not know anything else but him. So Krishna is saying that this relationship, which we all have with Krishna, it must be strengthened, it must be intensified, it must be cemented to such an extent that we don't want to think about anyone or anything except Krishna and the service to Krishna, which will give him pleasure. That is our only focus, our only intention, our only direction, but to give Krishna more and more pleasure, and more intense pleasure, and more... And a level of pleasure which is not only sweet and beautiful, but is pure and unalloyed, and which is the only thing that Krishna really wants and likes from his devotee. He doesn't need food, he doesn't need clothes, he doesn't need shelter, he doesn't need anything, because he owns everything. And if he owns everything, then he can have everything. So therefore, what is the only thing that he actually does want? What is his only desire? He enjoys his nourishment, his tastiness is in receiving and feeling and relishing
the pure love of His devotee in the form of devotional service. So when we serve the Lord and we give Him our love while we serve, there are different ways of serving. You can serve indifferently, robotically, uncaringly, or you can serve thoughtfully, intensely, carefully, looking at everything and being thoughtful of everything that we do, making sure that Krishna is going to get the best of us, and even knowing that we could become better, praying to Krishna and asking, I am only so good as you have allowed me to be. Please enable me to become even better so that I can offer a better grade, a higher level of service to you. Because the only thing I want to do, a higher level means more love, more thought, more feeling. When that is in there, in other words, my Lord, you are so magnanimous, you are so kind, so wonderful and sweet. I have committed so many offenses, so many sins, so many wrongs, and yet in spite of all this, you ignore them, you disregard them, you don't care about them, as long as I perform a little devotional service to you. And if I perform that service, you encourage me to do more and more and more and more. And I feel better and better and better and better, joyful, happy, fulfilled, satisfied. This is all coming from you, and I don't deserve it. Who can understand the compassion? Who can understand the kindness? Who can understand the sweetness of a father who's been kicked, who's been badgered, who's been ignored, who's been defied, who's been denied, who's been cursed, who's been blasphemed, and still he hugs his child? So when we realize how kind, how thoughtful and how affectionate Krishna is, we have an incredible, great, unimaginable debt to pay to the Lord. He doesn't demand anything. He doesn't say, I gave you so much, now you owe me so much. That would be materialistic. He doesn't care. All he cares about is that we keep trying to serve him, not just for his pleasure, but because when we serve him, he's filled with such joy and such, and his joy becomes increased. It becomes higher. It becomes stronger. And he then takes that joy and issues it or directs it back into us, the soul. When the soul feels this influx of joy and love from the Supreme Lord, the soul feels fulfilled, feels complete, feels satisfied. Normally, what satisfies us is the inflation of the false ego. But when a devotee slowly but surely gets rid of this false ego, the false ego means, I'm great, I'm wonderful, anyone who praises me is my friend. When he gets rid of that, and all he wants to do is give pleasure to the Supreme Lord, to Krishna, and Krishna then reciprocates with him, then he feels that joy in the heart, and it floods through the entire body. And with his body, he wants to move. There are different symptoms which occur. He may become stunned. He perspires. The hairs go up on the arms and in the neck. The voice chokes up, can't even speak. Or the color may change on the face. He may weep profusely. These are all symptoms, expressions of this influx of love of Krishna into the devotee's heart. And all he knows is just Krishna, 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 wherever he goes. In fact, he doesn't want to hear anything except Krishna. And even when he's dealing with something which is about Krishna, still in the back of his mind, he's thinking, Krishna, 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 don't let me forget you. Don't let me leave you. You are my life and soul. I want to be anchored to you. I never want to leave you. I want to be attached to you. So we have Aditi who is attached to her sons. So Kashyapa Muni is saying, if you become attached to Krishna, it doesn't mean that you will love your sons less, not at all. But it means that if they go away, you can still you can still be peaceful and joyful. Because that joy and peace will be coming from the Supreme Lord. And you will not be overly concerned, overly worried, over anxious, over confused, full of bewilderment. That will not be there, because that's not a part of transcendence. Transcendence means it's inner peace, inner strength. As it says in the Bhagavad Gita, a liberated person is not attracted to material sense enjoyment, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized soul, and the self-realized soul experiences unlimited happiness, for he concentrates and focuses upon the Supreme Lord. And the focusing upon the Supreme Lord is through the different, the most important, of course, is chanting the name. So when we have the name going through our minds, even if you're talking to someone, the name, you can still sense and feel it because it has become habitually established in not only the conscious mind, but the subconscious. Whatever is in the subconscious bubbles up into the conscious. So you're still hearing the name even though you're having a conversation. And when the conversation breaks, you immediately start chanting the holy name again. And you're so happy that, and you thank Krishna for helping you to remember the name. Because it's so easy, due to our attachment to our body and all the things connected to our body, to forget the holy name, to forget Krishna, to ignore him, to neglect him, to disregard him. Because we're so interested in our self-loving interests. Self-loving interests, my projects, and what praise I will get for them, what honor I will get for them, what distinction I will get for them. Actually, these things have to be thrown out. The only thing is, what distinction will Krishna get for them? What honor will I give to Krishna? If I get it, I give it to Krishna. Everything is for the honor, for the glory, for the celebration, or the glorification of Krishna. And that's what makes the devotee happy. And in a sense, he may appear to be nothing because he doesn't want anything, but in the sense, he only wants one thing, and that's Krishna, and with that one thing, he has everything. Everything means he has the mercy of Krishna. So if we have the mercy of Krishna, we will not ever fall into this position of Aditi, who is full of sorrow. Now to sum up the point is that Kashyapa Muni is not foolish to think that all he has to do is philosophize to her, and that's just as I'm talking today, and that's going to solve the problem for her. Not at all. Her attachment is deep. Very deep. And some of you who are mothers, you know that even though you practice the philosophy, still you can't help thinking of your daughters and your sons and so forth. It's just natural. So what he will do is he will fulfill her desire. And in fulfilling her desire, as she has these desires fulfilled, and finally, of course, what will happen is that Vamanadeva will take back the material world, this part of the world, and he will give it back to his brothers, Indra and Chandra and so forth. But in the course, you see, of doing that, because Aditi will feel very much obliged, very much indebted to him, because with her children around, well, she feels happy again. And in that mood of happiness, she can then pour into her devotional practices even more strongly. If you're in this mood of gloom and depression and disgust, it's very difficult to get into chanting the holy name. That's why it's always said to associate with devotees who are upbeat, to associate with devotees who are full of ecstasy and peacefulness, devotees who love every moment of their life because they're feeling the presence of Krishna. So we associate with such devotees and it's contagious and it injects itself into our own. And before we know it, the depression that we had, I've experienced this so many times, that depression or dejection, it disappears. And you don't have any need for some false crutches, it might be drugs or alcohol or whatever. You don't have any such, because you're, again, back into a joyful, fulfilled, satisfying consciousness. So this is the all-important point, is that, yes, it doesn't mean you should stop loving your children or just try to be falsely indifferent to them. That's impossible, and if you do it, you'll only be more miserable. But what we need to do is take these instructions very seriously, practice them with all our heart and soul. When we chant from the heart, chanting from the heart means that we actually hear the sound. It means that we carry the thought of, my dear Lord, as Srila Prabhupada mentions, please engage me in your transcendental loving service. We do it like a child crying out for its mother in a mood of some desperation. As if maybe the next 5 minutes will be the last 5 minutes. And when we carry that intensity, that fervor, that thoughtfulness, the whole of the mantra, it reaches, it touches, it focuses and fixes upon the heart of the Supreme Lord. And you feel a reciprocal flow of His love back. And you know that all your whatever anxieties or uncertainties or doubts that you have, they disappear. Because in transcendence, as we know, the spiritual world, Vaikuntha means the place of non-anxiety. Krishna is the person of non-anxiety. And the more we associate with Krishna, the more we will not have anxiety on the material plane. The spiritual anxiety is a whole different, and I don't want to get into that today. So I want to thank you all very much for your kindness, for listening, and giving me the opportunity to share with you the same teachings that we all read about from Srila Prabhupada. Glories to Srila Prabhupada ki! Srimad Bhagavatam ki! Are there any questions or comments? Yeah, I have one question. Go ahead, Prabhuji. Comment. Give him the mic then.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be an embarrassment. But Amala Bhakta Prabhu's words were some of the first words I heard in this world. I'm 28 years old, and I'm a miser. I haven't said this in 28 years, that he was one of my first spiritual teachers, and I learned to listen to him before I left diapers. So thank you, Prabhu. I offer obeisances to your lotus feet.
Wow. Okay, now you've just given me a bundle I have to give back to Prabhupada and Krishna. Thank you so much. Anyway, that's my test and that's my trial. Very kind of you. Anyone else would like to praise me? I'm glutton for this now. Thanks so much. Have a wonderful breakfast. Hare Krishna.
Sorry, I took some.